Bill?
Yes?
Yeah, okay. I'm looking at your IDL.
Yeah, it's basically has been written by Daniel. Daniel,
yeah.
John Seth?
Yeah, I've been working on it too, working on the gatekeeper part, but what I'm doing is I'm using IDLJ to check the syntax. Are you familiar with that?
IDLJ.
Hello, IDLJ, I mean.
Yeah.
Can you send a link to IDLJ?
IDLJ is a standard.
Ah, okay.
Any Java will have it. If you have Java installed, you should have IDLJ installed.
Uh-huh.
So it should be automatic if you happen to have Java. Actually, well, any JDK.
The current specification was not checked with any conversion system to Java or to Ruby or to other language.
Is that Daniel? We can barely hear you.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Barely.
This
is much better.
Better now?
Yes, well, I just tried checking your ontology IDL.
Yeah?
And it gives a lot of errors.
Yes. I've been exposed to the specification yesterday, and I've done it actually based on the specification, and I didn't use any compilation tool in order to convert it to Java or to other other languages. I've also noticed that I assumed the interface to be as powerful as the interface of other programming languages, and it's not. So there will be the necessity of using type values, which is not what I've used in this case. So, and it's also the ordering of the items is also important, relevant. So there are many things that need to be changed. I think that we can look at it as a collection of the main methods that were extracted from the OOR service and our service in. And then it's a compromise between different approaches, not approaches, but different systems. And I think we could look at it as maybe a sketch for discussing what we would like to have and not, and if the generality is good enough or not. Does it make sense?
Oh, yeah. It's just that I've been working with this, you know, on the gatekeeper part, and I can give you some suggestions about how to get this to work with the compiler.
Good. Okay.
Like, can I post this on GitHub?
Yeah.
Could you just post your GitHub name onto the chat, and then we can give access to you, and then you can just commit changes to GitHub, either with a Git tool or directly on the GitHub webpage. There you click edit, and then you can get a web editor and can make changes.
Yeah. Oh, here is edit. Oh, edit is. What happens with edit? With edit, I'd be editing your code, right?
Yeah. It's okay to edit it, but it's a repository. You can always get back to a previous version and so on. But currently you cannot edit it because you first have to get the permission to do so. Do you have a GitHub account?
Yes, it's under my last name.
So can you send the GitHub name onto the chat?
Yeah.
Or anyone else who wants access, please send this.
I don't want access, but I want to get notifications, so maybe you can subscribe me too.
Oh, I'm not sure whether I can do this. So,
no, I mean you can subscribe me as giving me access. Although I generally probably won't edit anything.
Yeah, but okay. Maybe it's a bad idea that we have this as part of the OntoHub repository. Because if you subscribe, then you get everything about OntoHub.
Right.
I'm not sure whether you...
Yeah, maybe we should have an OOR GitHub instance.
Yeah.
Maybe we should at least make it an action item to create one. Not now, but...
We can just have a new repository.
Yes.
And then I can give you access to that, and then you can get notifications there.
Right. That's
yeah, maybe that's
more appropriate.
A better way.
Can you document that on the chat then?
Coming back to the style of the API. So what I like there is that you basically have things. Yeah, for example, if you look at the method select ontologies, at the 10th line or so. That's basically this powerful method that we discussed last time. You have one powerful method where you can select ontologies. You can enter a lot of search criteria. You can leave them null if you don't want to apply them. And then you get back a list of ontologies. And this list of ontologies is basically here kind of in the list of abstract objects, and they could be just IDs in the representation. They could be full-blown XML trees, if you want. And then we have an interface for ontologies, what you can do with these ontologies. And I like this style because it abstracts away from the details how an ontology is represented. Of course, that's not what you can do in IDL. In IDL, the return type must be a specific data type, which can be a record or a recursive type, and one could represent this in XML and so on. So in order to get real IDL out of this, we would have to duplicate every item here, like repository, ontology, language, entry, and so on. And Daniel called this kind of, say, ontology proxy, where you have a specific representation of an ontology with all the data in there as a concrete data type in IDL. And then you have the more abstract interface, what you can do with ontologies. And then this list of ontology would be list of ontology proxy, basically, which would be the data type. But I consider this this is a refinement of this more abstract specification that we have now. And maybe we first should complete the abstract specification and then deal with these details of the representation as an IDL data type.
Oh, by the way, Ken, can you capture a little something about this IDLJ thing just so that we have a record of the exchange just now onto the chat?
So Todd asks, what happened to the use of instances of The metadata ontology is the function parameter. These are the categories. The meta, or what do you mean by metadata ontology?
Well, I thought we were going to have an ontology that would describe the metadata that's going to be used for OOR. And then instances of that as the actual function parameter, instead of listing out individual parameters, like you have IRI and what else is there? Let me go to that right page. Whoops. Oh, yeah, category, string by category, string by group, blah, prefix, blah, blah. All of those are parts of or represented in the metadata ontology, correct? Or should be represented there.
Okay, so far what Alexandra is doing now is actually creating an ontology for the categories, a kind of subject classification. So the name category is basically inherited from BioPortal.
The name category is but then what I understood from what you're saying is that we would have property name and property values for each one of those. So there would be a property name IRI, and a property value would be the IRI value. Is that what you mean?
Yes, it could be that.
Yeah.
But the idea was to avoid identifying specific parameters in the function call and, if you like, moving that complexity into the method itself, because it would just go through this instance, and if there's nothing there, I mean, if you just think of it as an XML schema instead, perhaps, not the best way, you know, if the field is empty, you know, you just ignore it. If it's not empty, you do something about it.
So it would be an array. It would be an array of an object type, which would be a string object parameter name and a string parameter value, as it is in the URL schema.
I don't understand. You mean in terms of representing it in this IDL?
Yes, yes. You mean like in representing it in the IDL, we would have probably a features a type, value type that is called like a feature or metadata, and then this one would have it would have a property name and a property value, which both of them would be a string, so that we would delegate the complexity of what can be a property name and a property value to the internal model and to the other systems, but not to the interface.
Okay, I think that's getting closer. Does this version of IDL have a notion of struct? And would that be a better?
Yes, the struct is something close to the value type. What they call value type is close to what we could assume to be a struct.
Would that be a better construct to use for passing this large chunk of string data around?
Yes, I would assume one of those properties or metadata would be implemented as a struct-like, not
just one of the properties, but the whole thing. You just pass the whole thing, and whether something's empty or not decides whether you use it or not. So, you know, I'm thinking of just passing, if you like, this container around, and then you have to go through the container and see which fields are empty and which are not.
So you mean having one structure, one struct that has all these parameters, IRI, name, category,
right.
Okay.
It could have them, but they could have a value of no.
Yes, of course. But then we would specify which are the parameters that are passable.
No, they're all passable. It just depends on which. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the point is, I'm talking about. Imagine that we have an HTTP schema, and then this schema allows any parameter that we want to pass. That is, it's completely open. In this case, we wouldn't. What you're suggesting, I understood, is that we wouldn't have this completely open strategy, we would actually have a struct that had some possible slots for name, IRI, category, and so on. And we would pass the struct. Is it an instance of that struct? Is that true?
Well, yes, but that struct would contain, would be an instance of the metadata ontology, the entire metadata ontology.
So, if I understand this right, you have a metadata ontology, which basically provides you with a vocabulary of possible keys, and then you kind of pass a list of key value pairs to this method, and then for each possible key from the metadata ontology, like IRI, name, category, language, and so on, you may pass a value, but you may also omit certain key value pairs and have a partial description.
Well, I guess you could do it that way. My intent was to just have this one structure that you pass around and without having to, if you like, derive auxiliary or ancillary structures from it, or, you know, subsets of data from it. There's just this one thing, and we use that effectively as the conveyor or communications mechanism format for all of these interface methods.
Yeah, but this structure is basically isomorphic to some set of key value pairs. Is this right?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
But again, that isomorphism in actuality and implementation can chew up a whole bunch of code if you really want to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to avoid that additional step of extracting things from an instance ontology, for instance, or just a set of key value pairs and passing the key value pairs around, as opposed to just passing around the whole bloody instance. Which itself has its own drawbacks, but in terms of the design and the architecture, it simplifies things.
So, but then you mean that you, so just making sure here that I understood. So you mean that for the select method, we would pass this struct. It's like a query struct, and then.
Yes.
We would have, for the other ones, in the sense of getting particular name or category of a particular ontology, then we would use an ID or something like that.
Well, how you actually implement it is something else. Right. I mean, obviously, when you actually get down to having to make the calls to the persistence mechanism, then you probably want to strip away a lot of the extraneous parameters that are not of value, or if they're null, for instance.
Yeah.
But in terms of this API, it would simplify things if you could say, well, all of your parameters are in this one struct, and you know you set them or you don't set them. But of course, then you want that the internal structure of the struct construct. Getting silly here. To actually be an instance of the ontology itself. It will reduce the amount of overhead for maintenance, because if you change the ontology, you don't have to run around changing a whole bunch of other things. You just have to change the mechanism that instantiates that ontology.
So, yes, but I mean, that I understand that.
Okay.
The point was in the difference between retrieving data and actually identifying which are the entities that we're talking about. These two, there are two mechanisms. One is in the search spectrum, in which we are selecting instances. Another one is retrieving data related to those instances. If we have a separated or a distributed system or federated system, it is good to have IDs passed around and actually selecting data, only the data that we need, not all the data related to those instances. Does it make sense?
Yeah, but that's effectively a query against these other federated systems. And you're assuming that you have some consistent identification mechanism.
Yes, that is at least for the particular system that you're talking that we're talking about. There would be an ID bound to that that particular system, in, that you one could actually further use in order to retrieve other data about the ontology. Let's say we have an ID of a particular ontology in a particular server, and we can actually get the name, the category, the groups that are working with it. And in which language that ontology is, or what all the entities in that ontology, and so on.
So, I mean, as a return value, passing the ID back makes sense because then the receiver understands the context in which it's in which that data is presented.
Yes.
So, but as a as you pointed out, there's two parts here. There's the front end where you're effectively making the query, and then there's the back end where you're actually retrieving the stuff and sending it back to the caller. And I was only concerned about, if you like, the front end, where you're making that query for a set of data or a particular item.
Yeah. So from the query side and selecting a list of entities that agree with the parameters or are restricted by the parameters, that makes very much sense, so that we don't bind the system to the current ontology that we have.
Right.
But then the retrieving of data, it might be useful to have some ID. That was only the only...
Understood. Yes, you're right. Thank you.
Yeah, and it might be necessary to have various degrees of... So you could deliver just an ID, or you could deliver a structured XML document with all the metadata, as we just have discussed.
Then let the user decide which they really want to retrieve?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
So I would like to capture all this on the chat. I'm not sure. Todd, could you write a small description of your idea?
I'll try.
Yeah, great. In the meantime, there is also a new repository now where Peter and Ken have access, and...
You have a repository?
Yeah, it's at the...
On the chat.
At the chat, there's a link. And the API now.
Great. Okay, everyone still there?
Yeah, we are still waiting for Todd. Todd wanted to capture this. It is typing.
Yeah, I'm a slow typer. You might as well go on. It's going to take me another few minutes to finish.
Okay. Yeah, so basically I suggest that we take this outcome of the discussion that we just had, and then redesign the IDL and check it with IDLJ. That would be the next steps. And maybe Daniel can start this, and then the others can have a look and also do corrections directly in the GitHub.
Right. I'm trying to upload my IDL, and I can't seem to find a way to do it.
Yeah, I have a question, Till. Seems like you subscribed me to the OntoHub repository and not this on OOR OntoHub API repository. Is that correct?
I subscribed you to the OntoHub team.
Yes.
And maybe that was...
You're doing exactly what you said.
Sorry, yeah. Now you should have access.
Okay, let's try again.
You should have access to both the API repository and OntoHub, but I think the OntoHub access... It's not harmful.
Right. I only need the API access. So
but I have now, okay, I could build two separate teams. Yeah, one for...
It says that I don't have write access?
Now you should have write access, sorry. Can you try again?
So I'm going to try making a new file.
So Peter,
yes.
If you go to the link, I just paste it into the chat, then you see on the left-hand side, you see onto hub/OR onto hub API, the name of the repository. And on the right, you see watch*fork. Can you see that?
Unwatch*fork.
Yeah,
yes.
If you see unwatch there, then you will get all the notifications. Because, yeah, you can also click at the small triangle after unwatch, and then you see your notification status.
I now have watching.
Now you're watching, and then you,
yeah,
you should get all the notifications. And then you can click, if you click on the onto hub just before the slash, then you get a list of all the repositories, and you can check whether you really don't watch the others.
Mm-hmm.
I think you shouldn't. Or if you watch them, then you can unwatch them.
Okay. I will unwatch them. Ah, okay. I'm in business.
Okay, thanks, Todd, for capturing the main ideas onto the chat. So I have a question. So this, you write for the front end of selecting or querying use of an instance of the metadata ontology should be used as a single parameter for the select method. But this single parameter would be kind of a struct, as we discussed, yeah? It should be a structured parameter, not an unstructured one.
Okay, I posted the gatekeeper. It finally worked.
Ah, thanks, yeah.
So it'll show you a few things like value types. I think that there was a question about how you deal with value types or structs. Also, to have an array, you use this sequence, specify sequence.
Where do you have sequences in there?
If you look at value type user.
Yeah.
The sequence responsibilities are an array of responsibilities.
Yeah.
So you can see how.
So if the return type of select ontologies would be a list of ontologies, and it should be such a sequence, yeah?
Right, although it should be a value type with such a list.
So we have to declare a value type ontology list somehow.
Yeah, that's pretty easy to do.
Okay.
The return type can't be a sequence, but it can be a... I think there's even a typedef notion. You can do a typedef.
That's true, yeah, there's typedef, yeah.
If you're just going to have just the sequence. But you might want to have an additional attribute in there, so it might be handy to have a value type.
May I ask just a question? I'm reading here the specification of IDL, and you have been using it for more time than I am. Is it possible to actually have a value type implement or actually extend an interface? Or is there any relationship between an interface and a value type?
Haven't tried that, but there is the ability to derive.
Mm-hmm.
You can do a derivation. I think the colon is the way you specify that.
Yeah. So this might.
You might try it.
Yeah, I'll try it here and see how what it generates in Java, so that I see what is to be expected. So,
I think in Java, you have to, if you're going to use IDL, when you use IDLJ, you have to specify. There's something you need to specify there about how you handle these, how you handle derivation. Anyway, there are some options you should specify when you're doing using IDLJ. But just using it without any options should generate code, and it will check the syntax. Yeah, there's something called the PI model instead of the typical inheritance model. Seems to be some choice there. Right. When you do derivation, you can choose to do it via delegation, or you can use the usual inheritance. Let's see. If you have an asynchronous operation, you can specify it as one way.
You mean a synchronous operation is specified one way, and asynchronous operations are...
No, asynchronous is one way.
Ah, asynchronous is one way. Ah, okay. So
yeah,
by default, by default, everything is synchronous. So you wait for the return. Yeah.
Right. And in the gatekeeper, there were a number of places where it specified that it was asynchronous in the use cases. So I put those in.
Yeah, and there are quite a lot of methods in the gatekeeper interface which are one way or asynchronous.
Yeah, because you make a request to do something, and all that actually does is, you know, kind of cues it. It has to be okayed by an authority. Or in the case of validation, it can take a while to validate, so that's also done asynchronously.
Yeah, I understand that if you upload and validate an item, then validation may take time, and then you want to be asynchronous. But if you just register a responsibility, that should
be a
quick result, shouldn't it?
Well, the authority has to check that you are allowed to do that.
Ah, okay.
But presumably that could happen very quickly if you have a pretty permissive system that just lets people do what they want.
Okay, I have captured this into the chat.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, we are just learning IDL, so and you have more experience there.
Well, I don't have that much experience. I haven't tried doing derivation yet. I don't know whether it's a good idea to use derivation too quickly. Let's say when you have derived types and you convert them into something like Java or then Wiggle, it can be kind of problematic. So I think that's the reason for them using this delegation idea, that it delegation is easier to handle when you're doing web services.
So, sorry, derivation means that you take an interface and derive a type from it, or what does it exactly mean?
Sorry, I meant delegation.
Delegation.
Delegation is where instead of having this subtype of a supertype, you just have an attribute. And then the methods are delegated to the supertype.
Yeah, okay. So it's the usual object-oriented inheritance, yes?
Well, no, not exactly. It's not actually a subclass. So you can't use the subclass object as if it was an instance of a superclass. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have that feature. It's basically just reusing the methods. So it's more of a reuse mechanism than it is a object-oriented modeling method.
Okay. So then basically we have come to some conclusion, I think, and Daniel can now work on the next iteration. And then I think, yeah, Daniel can send around a mail stating that there is now an iteration, and then the others can also work on the file via GitHub directly. Yeah?
I think we should
maybe... And it would be nice to merge these two APIs into a single one.
So the Gatekeeper API has exactly the same purpose as the API we are just discussing here, yeah?
Well, it should be just additional methods on the one you're developing.
It's more, yeah, it's more on users and team administration and so on, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, just add them to yours.
Yeah, okay.
Don't it shouldn't be a separate API.
Unless you want it. Modules would be also good. I think so, like having two modules would be also a good idea.
It could be a separate module within the API, yeah.
Yeah. Because in this way we guarantee that we are not putting too much information inside of one module. Separate different tasks or different interfaces between servers more strictly speaking we would be able to use these modules as actually the modules that we are trying or the components that we are trying to create.
Right. Good idea.
So that would be a consensus?
I think so.
Okay.
So we're going to have at least two modules in the API.
Yeah.
Okay, I have captured this on the chat.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Right.
And Peter as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, good.
So for this lower level work, I think we should use the OOR dev mailing list, not the OOR forum. For people who are not already on that list, could you give me the email address and then I can add you guys? I will add everyone here on today's call, except that I don't have Daniel's email address. I have everybody else. And Oliver can tell me which address you want me to subscribe you to. I probably have at least three of your addresses. Alexandra, I already have. Thank you, Daniel.
Okay, then I think we have come to some conclusion. Then I would address a slightly different topic, and namely concerning this ontology of subject classifications or metadata, but not all metadata, but just the categories in BioPortal or the subject in Dublin Core. So Alexandra is going to set up an ontology for this, and Alexandra, maybe you can say some words.
Hello?
Yes, okay, we can hear you.
We are just starting to work on this classification of categories for subjects and we are considering at the moment different classificatory systems that can be the most suitable for this purpose. We have been looking at the Library of Congress classification and a couple of others classifications that might fit this purpose. So we were looking at different standards that are accepted on the European and international level. For example, classification of occupations. That is, okay, so in principle, those two classificatory systems for classification of occupation and classification of education might fit better than Library of Congress classification, which is very much designed for classification of publication, and it fits well to that domain, but it might not be appropriate for classification of different domain ontologies. At the moment, it seems that classification of educational domains is most appropriate because it's very general, unlike classification of occupations. At the moment, I have sketched on Google Documents a file where I have collected a couple of international and European standards that might be used like reference for building that kind of classification and categorization of the subject domains or ontologies. So that is just a work in progress and a very initial point, and I hope in very soon future we will have something really to show and present. Thank you.
Sounds great.
Yeah, so this discussion was initiated also at the OR mailing list, and Leo Obst actually suggested this Library of Congress classification, and now it seems that Alexandra has found on this that this a European educational ontology is better suited. And then the idea would be that we basically take this ontology, or say the upper level of it, and then fine-tune this with handcrafted changes in order to meet the needs of ontology classification, which is, of course, a different need than educational classification. So, but the important decision that we need to make is what basis should we choose? Should we choose this educational classification or the Library of Congress or something else? Because once this has been chosen, it would be a lot of work to rebase this to another basis. Of course, fine-tuning is always possible later on, but changing the basis would be a major step, and that should be avoided.
I'm sorry, Till. Has consideration been made to use or some variation use of the what is it, the U.S. The United Nations listing of what the heck is it? They have some list. I don't know if it's businesses or products. These products. And the only reason I think of that is because it sounds like a daunting task, to say the least. And trying to come up with all of the domains and categories that might be available, maybe there's enough in the UN list, or maybe some sort of merging of what the Library of Congress has, the United Nations list, and what you talked about, the European education categorization. That sounds like a huge project. Is there really an absolute need for such an ontology, or this list of if you like categories?
Yeah, we need basically. We want to use this in OntoHub, and we will have various derivatives of OntoHub, say, space portal for spatial-related ontologies, concept portal for concepts and this analogy research, and there will, of course, be federation with BioPortal, where you have biomedical ontologies, and then we need some classification system for these categories. And I'm not sure whether this must be so huge.
Hold on, Till. Back up a second. Why do you need this categorization?
Yeah, I think BioPortal, he has this, and I think it's useful to have that.
Because?
Yeah, because BioPortal consists already of 330 ontologies. And if you want to browse them, it's useful to select them by category. Otherwise, you quickly get lost.
Yeah, well, I understand. Yeah, okay. This sounds like a real huge endeavor. I'm sure it would have, it has value. And in terms of, you know, facilitating user search, it certainly has value there. But I'm trying to think if there's some alternate way to do it, dynamically, using some sort of, natural language processing on what is in the in a repository or across repositories, federated systems.
Yeah, one could have tagging, that each ontology can be tagged with several tags, and it's kind of a bottom-up way of doing this, and then you would have a kind of chaotic development and could try to unify tags
stereo-wise.
But I'm not sure whether if this idea of taking, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We could just take several classification systems, merge them somehow, and then just use that. And so this United Nations stuff, is this the United Nations Standard Products and Services Code? Is this
that's what I was thinking. Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the exact name.
I posted the chat.
I guess you can scope this endeavor by not getting too granular in the categorizations. And hopefully there's also some relations among the categories that will be included here. I don't want to enforce this tyranny of taxonomy again. If we're providing ontologies to people, we should try and emulate the value that we get from them. Make use of that. If possible.
Sorry, could you
repeat that? Well, I argue against the tyranny of taxonomy. And if we have an ontology with at least binary relations, we should make use of that to the fullest extent, i.e. things are really a lattice in terms of relations among things. And the only reason we go to categorization, this taxonomic tyranny, is because we have not had mechanisms to make use of the lattice of relations among things in the past, but now we do. But on the other hand, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Are you saying that we could have several taxonomies in parallel that are kind
no,
of...
No, 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 no. I don't know.
At least through binary relations? No.
It should be one
large taxonomy plus binary relations.
An ontology, yeah. Exactly.
Yes, basically an owl ontology.
Well, I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like owls.
I mean, the Library of Congress is normally a SCoS ontology. I don't know SCoS too much.
Oh.
And
yeah.
Christoph Lange has told me that SCoS would be the right formalism for doing that. I'm not sure why, but...
Well, it's simple to use, and it can be implemented quickly. I mean, if we're in a hurry, we could probably do it that way and then supplant it with something with more rigor later.
I would prefer to start with an owl ontology from the scratch.
Okay.
Which might not be complete in the initial stage, but...
Oh, well, that's the beauty of using ontologies. It doesn't have to be complete. We can add things dynamically, right?
Exactly. It could be...
Yeah.
This ontology could be hosted at OR somewhere or at OntoHub. Could be changed dynamically, and
well,
then
I would
find the piston.
I would assume it would have to be changed. I didn't think we have enough manpower to come up or divide this necessary categorization and the relation among those categories in any short period of time. And, you know, as new stuff gets added, you probably have to add additional categories. We're not going to try and categorize everything in the world in one shot, are we?
Yeah, exactly. We should have some start, which basically provides the upper level, and then people that are not satisfied with this because it's too coarse-grained for them, they can provide finer distinctions. But you don't need all the finer distinctions from scratch.
Right.
That would be too much.
Yeah, agreed.
I just type this into the chat.
Can one download this United Nations standard?
Good question.
The United Nations standard is a five-level hierarchy. Can it be downloaded? I mean, what format is it in? Is it ontology?
No, it's just a bunch of codes. Product and surface code.
Looks like, just a bunch of codes and five levels.
Yeah, this is the UNSPSC is what we use as a sort of common vocabulary when people like Leo and Adam Chai and I were working at VerticalNet.
The only reason I mentioned it is because it may include some categories or some notions of domains that may not be represented in other paradigms.
Okay, but there's no taxonomy there, so it's just a flat list, so it's not particularly useful. So I would really start with taxonomies, and then people can always add things if things are missing. The crucial thing is that we agree on some kind of the upper level, kind of the upper ontology, although it's not an upper ontology in the standard sense, because it won't have, say, endurant and perdurant at the very upper level. But
I'm crushed. Well, why not? Well, maybe we should make it a separate subtask to align it with either Dolce or BFO or UFO.
Yeah, okay. Later. Okay.
I posted the link.
I mentioned. There is a.
It can be downloaded, but it costs $100.
No, the PDFs are free, so you can scrape from the PDF.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, Ken is good at that, I'm sure.
Aren't you generous, Peter?
And the third is free. Let's find one that's in English. There it is.
The PDF is free, but still you have to check out.
You still have to buy it.
And you have to fill in all your data. Yeah. Password, username.
So it's not free.
Okay. Okay, so Alexandra, do you have something? It's a good outcome, or do you want to say something?
I had another comment about this. It was in the Ontology Summit 2007. There's basically a discussion of how you characterize ontologies. And it came up with a number of different, perhaps you could call them attributes. So that's something else we could consider. It's not quite the same as classifying, but it's saying things like, how formal your ontology is.
Mm-hmm. That's something this is Mike Bennett here. One similar issue to that might be worth thinking is I often get in conversations where people say, you misuse this ontology of countries or this ontology of whatever, when you look at it, because it's an L, they're calling it an ontology. It's an extensional list of countries or states or things of one sort or another, rather than an intentional ontology with any kind of abstraction. And that might be a useful distinction to maintain, so you can start to relate intentional versus intentional definitions of similar things. Would that be helpful?
Yeah, that's exactly what was discussed in 2007.
Cool.
So if you go to the communique, you can see the kinds of things that were discussed there. I think they use the term prescriptive versus descriptive.
Ah, that's a much more business meaningful way of saying what I just said, which I would never be able to say to the business. So that's really useful.
Sorry, what's it? Descripted?
Prescriptive. That was definitely a big issue at that meeting. I think it came up, if you go to the communique, you can see the different dimensions they came up with. Well, we came up with, that was at the meeting, the expressiveness, structure, granularity, intended use, automated reasoning, prescriptive versus descriptive.
Ken, when looking at this ontology summit 2007 site, there is a lot of details, but what exactly do you mean there?
Are you looking at the communique?
Yeah, I just followed your link. Is this the communique? It's just, it's the main page of the...
That's the main page.
I should follow the communique, okay, yeah.
Follow the communique link.
And then the... okay, there's also this prescriptive versus descriptive. Okay. Yeah. Then I post the communique... link. Yeah. Thanks. Okay. Then it seems that we have reached some sort of conclusion, and we can continue these discussions next time. And when will be next time? That's now the question.
Right. It's a good point. I mean, to schedule another meeting. We have two more Tuesdays that we want to schedule, then we are going to take the whole of August off, and then we resume work in September. The first Tuesday on September will probably use for the team planning and admin meeting. Did I remember correctly that the hackathon activity wants to take up like the second Tuesday of the month or third? We did mention something about that before. Maybe
today it's the third, isn't it?
So
it would be 20th of August, would be the third Tuesday in August. Would that be possible?
No, August is totally off. Everybody's
okay.
Taking a break on August. My suggestion is maybe we could, since we don't have other things lined up, maybe we can meet again in 2 weeks. That's the 30th, and that would be our sort of August hackathon. And then we will do like September the 10th, and then make this second Tuesday as the regular date, if that's okay with everyone.
Sounds great.
All right. I will capture that. OOR hackathon. In .03 Tuesday, July 30th, break in August 10th.
every second Tuesday at the same time as today. Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, great meeting.
Yeah. Thanks for coming, and see you on July 30th in 2 weeks.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you. Bye-bye.